Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's Castle Report. Today is Friday, September 1st, 2017. And on today's report, I will be discussing President Trump's speech given on August 21st, in which he discussed, quote, our path forward in Afghanistan, end quote. He stated that his gut instinct told him to leave Afghanistan, and he likes to follow his instincts. But sitting behind the desk in the Oval Office gives one a perspective that he cannot see otherwise. I will point out that sometimes the perspective is changed not so much by sitting behind the desk in the Oval Office as it is by who is sitting in the Oval Office with you. Every one of the people who were involved in formulating the foreign policy announced on the campaign trail, the foreign policy that helped elect Donald Trump, have been sacked and replaced by deep state generals and other representatives of the deep state establishment. The United States, with Donald Trump as president, is not the first empire to attempt to conquer, pacify, or force to the bargaining table the Afghan people in whatever political form they existed at that time. The armies of Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, the Mongols, the British Empire, and the Soviet Union have all been broken or blunted on the rugged terrain, the history, and the religious fervor that make up Afghanistan. Now Donald Trump has been convinced that he is different from the others. His investment of thousands of more troops will make the difference, perhaps. He missed his history class at Fordham and at the Wharton School where he attended. That's really sad because the people he is committing to battle are our future, our sons and daughters, being thrown into this new strategy. So it looks as if the new strategy is the same old strategy. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss, at least in this regard. Your gut instinct was correct, Mr. President. You should follow it. You criticized President Obama for his no-win wars, and now you announce a strategy to do essentially the same, except with a few meaningless changes. During the campaign, you stated that Ron Paul was right, that we should never have gone into Afghanistan. What happened to that opinion, Mr. President? I imagine it disappeared when all those generals appeared in your administration. These are generals who have never won a war. They all have sterling combat records but were dispatched to fight endless no-win wars, and perhaps that clouds their perspective. We seek victory in Afghanistan, the president said, but we can't seem to define what victory even is. How will we know it when we see it? Who was the last general to have actually won a war and therefore would know victory when he saw it? The World War II generals led by General Eisenhower, I suppose. That was 72 years ago. Richard Nixon was quoted as having said that Ike would be able to control the generals because he had been a general and would not be intimidated by them, but most presidents would be. More than 70 years of fighting and dying, but never being able to sail into the enemy's harbor to accept his surrender has to affect the psyche of career officers. Service-wide, the president spent several minutes of his speech complimenting the military, saying how grateful we are, and so forth. But apparently, he intends to use them in the same old way. He said he had arrived at three fundamental conclusions about America's core interest in Afghanistan. First, quote, our nation must seek an honorable and enduring outcome worthy of the tremendous sacrifices that have been made, end quote. That is an impossible goal unless he wants to commit American troops to Afghanistan permanently. Perhaps that is what he means, i.e. to have Americans in protective enclaves and fire bases around Afghanistan forever. But I don't think so. No. He's talking about the same strategy that failed in Vietnam, and that is to make it's so costly in lives for the Taliban, they are anxious to enter into negotiations for some type of power-sharing arrangement. Well, number one, that sounds a lot like the political arrangement that existed before we got there. Number two, it won't work. The enemy forces in Afghanistan will never negotiate in earnest. Why should they negotiate when they can just wait us out until we finally get sick of it all? Or until we have a bigger, more costly war on some other side of the world, they may sign some power-sharing agreement, as the North Vietnamese did, and then when we leave, they will violate it, just as the North Vietnamese did. Second, He said that, quote, the consequences of a rapid exit are both predictable and unacceptable, end quote. Rapid exit, indeed. 16 years now and several thousand American lives and about $1 trillion in treasure expended already. So what would a slow exit look like? I've got a feeling we're about to find out. He went on to explain how the 9/11 terrorists trained there. And he pointed out that we can't let them use it as a base. Again, no mention of the fact that President Obama's and Hillary Clinton's actions in Libya turned that country into a lawless state and currently one of the world's biggest terrorist training bases, meaning terrorists already have safe havens in which to train. No mention of the fact that the 9/11 terrorists actually were almost all from Saudi Arabia. Third, quote, the security threats we face in Afghanistan and the broader region are immense, end quote. Okay, so we're right back to where we started. How did we get in this mess? How do we get out of it? Aren't the people President Trump has surrounded himself with, generals and civilians alike, at least partially responsible for where we are now? Shouldn't we therefore consider a different strategy, one closer akin to the strategy announced in the campaign, i.e., leave immediately? President Trump made much of his willingness to let battlefield commanders make decisions in the field about how to conduct the war, and I applaud that, since it is impossible for civilians in Washington to micromanage tactical decisions 7,000 or 8,000 miles away, at least, in a competent manner. However, that's a lot different from letting them actually enact strategy that affects the long-term direction of the United States foreign policy. Our system requires civilian control of the military, not the other way around. The president had some good ideas during his campaign. He might not have expressed them that well, but still, a breath of fresh air. Ideas like the Afghanistan adventure was wasting our money. It was a total disaster. What we are doing there, the people hate us. We should leave Afghanistan immediately. No more losing endless wars. No more strangling regulations. No more bad deals with other countries. He called it America First. I took that to mean he would put the interest of America ahead of the deep state military, foreign policy, warfare, welfare, cabal that has controlled U.S. policy for so many years. Those are the ideas that got Donald Trump elected. But, oh well, there was a better deal coming to America, he said. The art of the deal. From the master dealmaker himself, it would have worked too. That's why the American people elected him. In his speech, he told us that things take on a different perspective when you sit behind that desk. Yes, the perspective is very different when you look across the desk and all you see are deep state military and corporate reps with a few conservative incorporated crony capitalist supporting politicians thrown in. What gives the deep state its entrenched power? What has allowed it to become so powerful it no longer matters who holds political office? The deep state controls it all, keeps us under control through its complete ownership of virtually all mass media. It does it all by way of the debt-based, credit-based money system created by the Federal Reserve Act passed by Congress on Christmas Eve in 1913. The endless supply of fake money allows politicians freedom from monetary and even moral restraint. They don't have to care about the debt. Who cares how high it goes? We can always borrow more. No one gives a thought to what another $1 trillion for Afghanistan means. Just add it to the debt. Keep in mind that the debt ceiling expires in 4 weeks, and a new increase will have to be passed, or theoretically, the government would shut down. Finally, folks, I would be remiss if I didn't also point out that no constitutional authority exists for the Federal Reserve or for wars such as Afghanistan. Cut off the fake money, and foreign adventures will cease because there will be no way to pay for them. Sanity will return to politics. The American economy will boom with new jobs. Fake money is the key, folks, if we want to change other than just more words and more empty promises. The money system must change first. At least that's the way I see it. Until next time, folks, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.